This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Today on AFCEA Answers, who are you really? The next generation of identity assurance. The conversation starts right now. I'm Max Kakis with AFCEA International. Welcome to AFCEA Answers. Joining us in the studio today, Ken Gant, the Acting Deputy Director of the Office of Biometric Identity Management at the Department of Homeland Security here in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Stephanie Shuckers, Director of the Center for Identification Technology Research, that's CITER. It's a multi-university national science research center. She's also a professor at Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York. Stephanie and Ken, welcome to AFCEA Answers. Thank you for joining us today. Ken, I was hoping we could start by talking a little bit about your work in the realm of identity assurance at the Office of Biometric Identity Management, OBIM. How does identity assurance fit into the mission of the work at DHS?
So, Max, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here today, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
And the Office of Biometric Identity Management, OBIM, short form, was stood up this year or established in March of this year with the congressional act that came out. And most of the functions from the former U.S. visit that most people know did transfer. But what it really did for us is it tightened our particular focus into biometrics and honed what we do for the Department of Homeland Security when it comes to identity services. It also allowed for some of the other aspects that we were overseeing, meaning overstay, which went to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and entry-exit, which went to Customs and Border Protection, to basically go where they can get more benefit for the public and what needs to be done for border security. What I can tell you is that what we really focus on now is delivering identity services in which the department can use in verification, identification, credentialing, and those types of services.
Would you consider what you do more, or what your office does, more policy or technology management, or is it a little bit of both?
I would say it's a little bit of both, and that we do have the technology in the IDEN system, which takes care of the matched or share. But we also have to cooperate and collaborate within the department when it comes to policy, but also with our stakeholders and partners, because the challenge will always be those aspects of privacy as well as civil rights and civil liberties.
Very good. And Stephanie, I wanted to turn to you. We're going to talk about the intersection of what both you and Ken do in a few moments. But tell me a little bit about CITER, C-I-T-E-R. You head up a consortium, and I guess that's probably the best way to talk about it. But tell me about some of the work that you and your colleagues are doing.
Yeah, we're a National Science Foundation center, but really we operate with support from National Science Foundation for our what we call affiliates, so essentially stakeholders. It's industry and government stakeholders. And through the affiliations, people like FBI, Department of Defense, system integrators, DHS, thank you very much, small businesses, technology providers, we work as a group to define research needs for the next generation of identity technology. And so I can speak a little bit of some of the themes, because through this consortium, we're looking at the needs that are out there, the government needs, the commercial needs, and then defining what are the research needs. And we have sort of three things that I want to highlight at some point in terms of research.
Now, what are those three things very briefly?
Yeah, so one, you mentioned already, privacy and security, and I think that's one worth delving down to as we talk today. But essentially, looking at technologies that support not a continuum privacy or security, but support privacy and technology together, privacy enhancing technology. We look at performance. You know, you look at the performance of the system, but one thing that's we've been studying recently has to do with the quality of the information that is put into these systems, because they're directly correlated with performance. Knowledge of that information is very helpful to assess your decisions, to decide how to put information together, to fuse it, and certainly to try to look at aspects that would improve quality, things like usability of your system. And the third thing are science fundamentals. As an academic, I'm always happy to talk about fundamental science.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I guess along those lines, we're going to, I want to ask you one really quick question here, and we have about a minute to talk about that. What's the intersection of what you do, Stephanie, with what Ken does at DHS? And Ken, how does academia factor into the kind of work that you do in trying to keep up, stay ahead of the ball game? Because so much of cybersecurity is not just answering threats, but staying ahead of them.
So CIDR is a great program. And what they bring to us is a partnership that involves the government, industry, and academia. And what academia does is it's an opportunity for those new concepts, those new ideas to start to take hold. And as they do that, then it allows for those bright minds to bring to government things that we have a need that they can explore in an environment that is really, let's just say, without restraints. And that's a good thing, because we need those kinds of things, because as they work on them and we look at where we're headed, these are the ideas that we want to take into the future with what we're doing. So it really is an awesome partnership. And I think that those three entities, academia, industry, and the government, we've got to look for that direction. And I'd like to do the challenge always: where do we want to be with biometrics in the next 5 years? And what does that look like with identity in a broader perspective, broader spectrum?
Stephanie, I'm going to ask you to answer that same question when we come back from our break. Still to come, connecting the dots between identity assurance and cybersecurity. You're listening to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio.
FCA has been providing an ethical forum for government, military, and industry to exchange information since its establishment in 1946. Experience FCA in action at its upcoming events. MILCOM, the International Military Communications Conference, November 18th to 20th in San Diego. TechNet Asia Pacific, December 3rd to 5th in Hawaii. And the Global Intelligence Forum, December 10th through 11th in Brussels. Many of FCA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with FCA's international journal, Signal Magazine. November's issue focuses on tactical operations and the Asia-Pacific region. Further your education by taking a professional development course. Topics include communications, networks, information assurance, contracting, and homeland security. FCA is the association for global security. Learn more and join today at FCA.org. That's FCA.org.
Welcome back to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio. Our guests today are Dr. Stephanie Shuckers, Director of the Center for Identification Technology Research and a professor at Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York, and Ken Gant, the Acting Deputy Director of the Office of Biometric Identity Management at the Department of Homeland Security. Now, Stephanie, I wanted to give you an opportunity to answer the question that I posed before the break, and that is, tell me about the intersection between what agencies like Ken Gantz does and the research that's done at an academic level. Earlier, you talked about all of the different agencies that help with your work and assist in different ways with your work. How about that intersection between academia and the policy folks?
I think it's a great question, because it really does get at what we do in academics. And certainly there's the Ivory Tower, and the Ivory Tower is important because you're looking at, you're just following a path, you keep your eye on that, and that's what you do. But then there's parts of our research that really do need to be very familiar with what is happening. Something like CIDR and other centers who are engaging with government and industry, listening to what their job is, what their need, not just what are their research needs, you can always ask that, but really understand what their mission is within their organization. And when we understand that, that can help translate to a next research problem. You start to internalize it, and those internalization can result in another breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And so there is an intersection, and a very important intersection, in my opinion.
Now that leads to another question that I meant to ask you, because there's also an intersection with other federal agencies that are doing similar work. Over the summer, I had an opportunity to interview Jeremy Grant over at NIST, who is doing work on the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, primarily an effort to help the private sector develop a digital trust mark. Ken, I was wondering, from your perspective, are there other efforts in the federal government that you can address that where we're trying to tie this all together? Because they say that cybersecurity is a team sport, you know, and technologies and policies and procedures that work in one sector sometimes transfer to another sector.
Max, that's a great intersection. The directorate I am in at the Department of Homeland Security, which is the National Programs and Protection Directorate, which is where cyber basically resides within the department, works a great deal with our Science and Technology Directorate, which is a sister directorate. Mm-hmm. And I believe that within the S&T realm, they are very involved with the NSTIC folks, and there are initiatives that are ongoing, especially when you look at the financial community. And while I can't speak to all the specifics, and maybe that's something for a later program for you.
Sure.
I do know that the department is very much interested and involved in those aspects of cyber because of the criticality to what that brings and the harm it could cause to American assets.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie, from your vantage point heading up this consortium, are there a lot of opportunities because this is primarily technology driven, and because agencies like Ken's and also Jeremy Grant's pull together the policies and also the funding and also a lot of the support, is this the kind of thing that drives the work that you and your colleagues do? Because it's one thing to identify the demand, and then you guys get to help determine the means for meeting that demand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this kind of effort really translate in one of, you know, our challenges these days. And so understanding those challenges. So, you know, trusted identity in cyberspace. What does that mean? Cybersecurity. And so we all like to use cyberspace to enable our lives, to help us. Mm-hmm. But yet we want trust in the transactions we do. And so initiative like that is critical from the academic side, you know, because it's putting together the platform to enable it. But the research questions that come out of those kinds of things like levels of trust, mm-hmm. how do we combine information and to get various levels of trust depending on the types of trusted transactions you're looking for, right? And so when we talk about biometrics, we recognize we're not in a vacuum, right? We also look at our traditional means, passwords, PINs. We look at tokens, look at information that you know. And so there's a whole cadre of how do you put all that information together? Mm-hmm. Maybe not much information if you don't need, like, your fingerprint on the iPhone to buy a song, right? Versus that information combined with other information when you want to transfer money from one bank account to another. Mm-hmm. So there's research questions to keep us busy, but the platform is an enabler, right, to make that kind of thing happen.
And even to the degree that when I spoke to Jeremy Grant at NIST about his project, the NISTIC project, he opened up our conversation by saying, passwords are a thing of the past. You know, we desperately need to get away from passwords because it's a failed technology, such as it is, because, you know, it's so easy now to get past a password. And yet the difficulty comes when you have so many stakeholders. You've got government. The military is struggling with this. The private sector is struggling with this. And yet there's so many different areas in which you can bring this all together. We're going to follow this up a little bit more in our next section. Still to come, making an identity assurance wish list for industry. You're listening to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio.
FCA has been providing an ethical forum for government, military, and industry to exchange information since its establishment in 1946. Experience FCA in action at its upcoming events. MILCOM, the International Military Communications Conference, November 18th to 20th in San Diego. TechNet Asia Pacific, December 3rd to 5th in Hawaii. And the Global Intelligence Forum, December 10th through 11th in Brussels. Many of FCA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with FCA's international journal, Signal Magazine. November's issue focuses on tactical operations and the Asia-Pacific region. Further your education by taking a professional development course. Topics include communications, networks, information assurance, contracting, and homeland security. FCA is the Association for Global Security. Learn more and join today at FCA.org. That's FCA.org.
Welcome back to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio. Our guest today, Ken Gant, the Acting Deputy Director of the Office of Biometric Identity Management at the Department of Homeland Security, and Stephanie Shuckers, Director of the Center for Identification Technology Research, professor at Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York. Now, Ken, I wanted to ask you an some ideas from you. If you had an opportunity to talk to people from industry, and of course you've got the director of a very important center doing academic research in the area of biometrics, what would your wish list look like for all of that?
So, Max, I believe that where we have to get to is enhancement of public knowledge, and we have to do it with all three entities, academia, government, and industry. And when I say that, and Stephanie and I were talking a little bit earlier, the challenge we have is my wish list is for privacy and civil rights, civil liberties, or constitutional rights and civil liberties to be addressed, because that's where the long lead is. I think that technology, it moves at a great rate, and it takes a long time for policy and those items, constitutional rights and civil liberties, to catch up. So if I really were to put together a wish list, it would be something like, here's what we want to be able to do with biometrics leading to identity. And the policies and the constitutional rights and civil liberties are addressed up front. Then we step in as a community and we identify what exactly does it look like that we want to have. And then the industry turns around, and in that, what we want to have, academia has contributed those ideas. Then the industry turns around and says, we can bring that to you with the safeguards and with those regulatory aspects that you're going to need that enhance that public knowledge and faith and confidence that we can deliver on two things. Number one, safeguarding the information, biometric information, which is a pointer. And then number two is that we will regulate ourselves in the use and distribution of that information. If we could line it up like that, that would be awesome, because it would be great, not just for national security and homeland security, public safety, but it would also be outstanding for quality of life, which leads to benefits and things like that for the American public.
Great. Stephanie, you just heard Kent's wish list there. Well, what are you and your colleagues have in the lab, as they say, that might start to address some of that?
So when it comes to identity, I think we've all had this experience where whatever mechanism we had in place, we forgot our password fails.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have to give a lot of information. People want to know our name, our address, our mother's maiden name, where we lived 5 years ago, you know, what's our favorite, you know, movie. And so, and those things are good, but, you know, biometrics can possibly add to that. Why do people sometimes get uncomfortable? That's that perception thing you're talking about. They get uncomfortable because they're looking at the aspect of biometric, which has to do with privacy. But certainly that aspect of privacy is true for the rest of the information that you just had to provide. So really now we want to say, well, what can we do? What kind of technology and policies can we put in place to start to decrease the amount of information you have to reveal?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, on the biometric side, if we've could do biometric matching in a secure space where that information is never unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just we call it biometric crypto systems. It's a locked matching. So the actual biometric information isn't revealed. Our template security is another name we use for it. It's not simply just encrypting your template, unlocking it to match. You never unlock it. You match in the encrypted space. That's a technology that's an enabler. Now we have privacy enhancing with the biometric. We don't have to answer those 20 other questions. So now we've actually improved privacy through the use of a technology,
mm-hmm.
not made a risk associated with privacy.
Hmm.
I have another solution, but I don't know what your time frame is.
let's do one more.
Okay. I get one more. All right. Here's my second one. So, you know, we heard a lot of talk with the iPhone about faking the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I talked a little bit early about convenience is, you know, in the particular case of the implementation of the iPhone, I think there's not a big risk.
Mm-hmm.
Every authentication technology has its weaknesses.
And you're talking about the fact that the new iPhones have the fingerprint scanner.
They have a fingerprint scanner, mm-hmm. and it was shown to be faked. You know, as we know, passwords have vulnerabilities. We write them down. We forget them.
Right.
Other people can look over their shoulder, take your PIN. So does biometrics, this vulnerability if somebody can fake it. So there's a technology in research and rolling out to some commercial sectors that's called liveness detection. It's not really measuring liveness. What it's doing is ensuring that the biometric that's being measured,
mm-hmm.
is coming from the person.
Oh.
And in that sense, then if a fake finger comes along, it says, you know, I'm not going to work. And so for cases of biometrics where you need that level of security, and I'm not convinced the iPhone would be a case of that.
Right.
That technology can be in place. So there may be applications where you may want that.
So going back to the top of our show, it really does identify, it does answer the question, who are you really in that case?
All right.
Very good. Well, on that note, I want to thank our guest, Ken Gant, the Acting Deputy Director at OBIM at the Department of Homeland Security, and also Stephanie Shuckers, Director of the Center for Identification Technology Research, also a professor at Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York. Our special thanks to the FCA Homeland Security Committee for production help with today's show. Got a question about what we've discussed today? Got an answer? The conversation continues on our blog at federalnewsradio.com. Search FCA. That's AFCEA. That's also where you can download this program and our previous shows for listening on your schedule. This program is a production of FCEA International, which is solely responsible for its content. On the web at FCEA.org. I'm Max Kakis. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for FCEA Answers on Federal News Radio.